good night, and are beginning with a good morning. Of course, the best of times, as far as I'm concerned, are the times when the people of God can gather together like this and open up His Word to consider the wonderful mercies of God, and of course to praise Him and glorify Him. As was already announced in the course of this meeting, our Bible class for this morning is on the subject of the existence of God. In all likelihood, every man, woman, and child here already believes there is a God. And some of the times that prompts the question, well, why do we need to talk about this? Well, there are actually several reasons why we ought to talk about this from time to time. I'm not saying that this ought to be a constant barrage that we continually engage in, but at the same time, to leave it alone is to leave us open. One of the very good reasons is because our young people are constantly under attack in our school systems, trying to indoctrinate them, trying to brainwash them into believing that everything that is around us came about by chance. Now, obviously, we're not talking about the building or the pews or the pulpit or the laptop or the projector. You know, we all say, well, you know, those things were made by somebody. Someone had to erect the building. Someone had to fabricate the pews. There, a lot of design went into the computer and the projector. In fact, they're not first-generation technology. You know, it took years and years of developing and changing and getting better. And so all of these things were made. But, you know, when we look at the universe around about us, people can't quite see it that way. It's just amazing. We have all of these things around us this morning, and we can look at them and we can say, someone made that. Someone had intelligence. There was intelligence that had to be exercised to create these things. And anybody you bring into this building that has their sanity about them is going to recognize that, all the way from the brainiest PhD down to the peasant. It just, everybody understands that. But when you go outside of this building and you begin to look at the sky, the clouds, at night you look at the stars and the moon, you see the movement of the sun, you recognize the seasons of the year. They say all of these things came about by chance. In other words, we're all just an accident. This is what our children are constantly bombarded with. But of course, we as adults, while we feel like we can handle it well enough, still in the media, and of course, if you like the documentaries on the History Channel, the Discovery Channel, the Science Channel, then you're going to be barraged with this constantly. This idea that, oh, we're on a planet that's billions of years old. And life evolved over millions of years. And we're supposed to believe that. We need to confirm our faith. We need to allow ourselves to understand that we are not upholding a teaching about a divine being that created all things on the basis of blind faith. And you know, a lot of people who do believe there is a God, they're really convinced that their faith is a blind faith. And that's ridiculous. There simply is not enough evidence to even make evolution rational. There's where the blind faith is. When it comes to believing in God, it is really the only reasonable, logical explanation for all that we have around us. And so that's why I have entitled our lesson this morning, The Compelling Case for the Existence of God. When you look at the evidence for the existence of God, the evidence is compelling. It overwhelms. And of course, this morning, we can just take a little piece of that evidence. Many people would be amazed at how much evidence can be brought to bear in talking about the existence of God. But of course, what we want to do this morning needs to come to an incredibly great degree from the Word of God. It's interesting that when you open up your Bible to Genesis chapter 1, it begins, "Within the beginning was God created the heavens and the earth," and it never goes about to prove there is a God. And it does not go about to prove that that God actually did that. And that's really very interesting. But we find when we look at the Old Testament, of course, Genesis was being written to a people who already believed that there was a God. And so why in the world would Moses go about to then try to offer evidences for the existence of God? They knew there was a God. How did they know there was a God? Well, let's see now. They had just come out of Egypt. And what had God done to the Egyptians? 10 times he just absolutely decimated them. And the very last time, we find after they come out from that last plague, he destroys their army in the sea. Now go and figure, a sea opens up, water on both sides. No, it didn't happen like the Discovery Channel made out. Or maybe that was on A&E, I don't know. It's supposed to be a big wind. It blew all the water out of the lake, and it blew it all to one end of the lake, and they crossed over. You know, if the lake is that small, why didn't they just go around it? You know, you put a PhD on a documentary project, and you've got disaster coming. I tell people get impressed with PhDs, letters after people's name. Do you know what it takes to get a PhD? It does not take a lick of common sense. It does not take a lick. What does it take? All you have to do is know the answers that go on the tests and be able to write your doctorate when all is said and done. And of course, when you write your doctorate, what are you writing? You don't necessarily have to discover anything. All you have to do is write what the people you're writing it, who are going to be listening to it, you need to write what they're going to agree with. It doesn't take a lick of common sense. You just go along with the crowd. That's what a PhD basically is. And I'm sorry. And you can say, well, Bob, you don't have a PhD. No, I don't. And I'm not going to get one, and I don't want one. I know too many people that it ruined. Now, there are a few people I know that it didn't ruin, so don't take me wrong. But I don't need a PhD to have common sense, and I don't need a PhD to look at the Word of God or to look at creation and to know these things. And you young people understand this. It's easy when you're young to get impressed with teachers. Well, my teacher has a master's degree. My teacher has a PhD. It's easy to get impressed with these things, but do not get impressed with those things. Because those letters after their names does not mean that they have a lick of common sense. They may be able to recite all kinds of important and interesting facts in various realms, and they may be able to say things that are way over your head. But that does not mean that they have evaluated the data correctly. That takes a little bit of logic and common sense that you'll find a lot of times PhDs, they simply don't try to exercise because in their field, they have to some degree, go along with the crowd to keep the funding if they are in a funding program. So, why go rock the boat with the truth when you need to keep the money coming in? So don't get impressed with those kinds of things. When you look at the Bible, you find that at times it does offer statements that present what seem to be evidences, and they're not really evidences. We're going to look at a couple of those. They're not really evidences. They're simply statements of fact. But the fact that they bring out are based on this idea that there is evidence that there is a God and that He created all that is around us. The one area that we are going to emphasize this morning, and there are several areas of evidences that you can go to in order to talk about this, but the one area that we want to look at in particular this morning is the area that the Bible actually speaks of. And that is the fact that the heavens declare the glory of God and the firmament His handiwork. So we find that in Psalm 19 and verse 1, the psalmist, he's not trying to prove there is a God. He is simply stating a fact. When you look into the heavens, go out and look at night. Look at the stars. Look at the moon. Look at it rising. and watch it move in its course. And the sun, as it moves in its course. And all of these things operating day in and day out, month after month, year after year, like a clock. And that's exactly what they are. Our solar system is a giant clock. And it's moving in a beautiful orchestrator. And I use that purposefully. In a beautiful orchestrator, ballet of grace and beauty. And when we see these things around us, they're not running into each other. There's order. Instead of the chaos of chance, we see the order of intelligence. And that's what we have in this passage right here. We have the intelligence behind all of this. The glory of God is there when you look. The design. The intelligent design. Just as I noted at the beginning of our lesson, you've got a laptop here. You ever looked inside one of those things? You've never looked inside one. I'm not going to let you look inside mine. It's another warning. Probably wouldn't let you anyway. I use it too much and I don't want anything to go wrong. If you ever look inside one of those things, you're looking at just the surface. It's amazing the way they put those things together. That little green board that you look at that has all those components on it, and you turn it over and it has some components on that side too, you don't realize that there are other layers in between that. Someone designed that. Can you imagine sitting down with a piece of paper and drawing that thing? Of course, they do that on computer now. But originally, they had to start out. They would draft these things. Draw them out. All of the thousands of components, that had to be designed. When you look at the world around about you, try to imagine all of the individual things that have to be working just right all together in order to keep things from colliding, in order to keep things from falling apart, in order to keep you from falling apart, just within your human body. The design is beyond denial, and yet scientists will deny it. Now, in this lesson, I think you understand that when I say scientists, I'm not trying to indict all scientists. So here's the disclaimer. There are scientists that believe there is a God. There are scientists who believe that in the young earth, in other words, God did not create these things billions of years ago. There are people who believe there is a God, but they believe that God created through a process of evolution over millions and millions of years, having created all things billions of years ago. And basically what they have done is they have sold out to science, falsely so-called, just to borrow Paul's words. What they have done is they have looked at the false evidence that science has offered for a long period of time over which this earth must have developed. And they've decided, well, that must be true, so the earth really must be billions of years old. Life must have evolved over millions of years, and they've decided, well, that must be it. But what you need to realize is science has no evidence, it has no proof that the earth is billions of years old or that life evolved over millions of years. It's all false science. What we do find when we look at the creation around about us and we exercise true science, which the Bible, by the way, it upholds every law of science. It never denies or defies any law of science. But in your science classes in the public school systems, even when I was in school it was being done, they would teach you the laws of science on the one hand, for example, the law of biogenesis, life only comes from life. And then, next semester, you'll be told life didn't come from life. Now, go figure. But the Bible never contradicts that. Life has always come from life, and it came from the ultimate source of life, God, in the very beginning. The law of thermodynamics, everything's running down. That is a scientific law. They will teach you that law in school. And then the next semester, they'll be telling you everything's getting better. We're all evolving and getting better and better. And, well, of course, you know, us human beings, we're the fly in the ointment. We're making everything worse and we're ruining the world and all of that. We're causing global warming and all that kind of garbage. But that's science. Now, when we look at science, you say, well, then the scientist doesn't believe this idea that design demands a designer. Well, scientists will not deny that. They'd be fools to deny that, wouldn't they? They get in a car every day and they drive somewhere, they drive to the university, they drive to the public school, and they drive in something they know someone designed, someone built. It was sent to a car lot where it was, to some degree, intelligently sold to them. They know and they believe that design demands a designer. But they believe the earth and all that is in it and the solar system and the universe, this is all an exception to the rule. And I'm going to tell you right now, they're a bunch of hypocrites. Now, you already know that from what I just told you. They believe a car is designed and they drive it around, but they look at the design of the universe and they say, no, that happened by chance. Okay? That's hypocrisy. But I'm going to show you the ultimate in scientific hypocrisy. When we look at science today, one branch of science is radio astronomy. I was asked about the picture at the very beginning before services began, and what is that? And I told the young man who asked me, that is the closest representation of a radio telescope that I could find in a file that didn't make my PowerPoint too big. Of course, I didn't put it in those words, but it's a radio telescope. And what it does is it listens to space. And I told them stars make noise, and the Bible even tells us this. The Bible told us this thousands of years before man ever discovered it. In Job chapter 38 and verse 7, I'm sorry, I don't have time to let you turn there if you want to. It's 38 and verse 7. But here, the Lord speaks of when He created all things. And He speaks of that day saying, when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. And someone says, well, that's just a metaphor. And it's just expressing the idea that the angels were singing when it says the stars sang together. But the word for sang here is a very interesting word, because the word sang here is not the word that would have been used for a Hebrew choir. Because the word sang here, the noise that is being indicated in this verse is the idea of a high-pitched, creaking, shrilly type noise. And one fella illustrated it very well. He said, you know those old iron gates that have become kind of rusty, and you open it up, and it doesn't have that low-pitched creaking. You know, it resonates through that iron gate, and it gives you this high-pitched, and it just sets you on edge. That's the noise a star makes. But you can't hear it. You need something that will collect the noise like that. Now, your tax dollars have, through the years, been spent to the tune of billions of dollars in order to put these things up and to fund them so that scientists can listen to the stars and quasars and pulsars and all kinds of things out there in space. Now, I don't mean to get you riled up here, but that's what your tax dollars are doing. Just thought you ought to know that. And what they're doing is they're doing something that they discovered back during World War II. That's when man learned about the stars singing. They realized when they were using their high-tech devices of that day in trying to detect German aircraft coming in, the radar. They were having trouble with the radar. They couldn't figure out what it was. And right after the war, they discovered the problem was coming in from space. The Germans weren't jamming it like they thought they were doing. It's coming in from space. So they discovered that. And so we've got radio astronomy being born. And they're listening to the stars. What are they listening for out there? They're listening to signs of intelligent life. They're trying to, out of these signs, I don't know, they're trying to detect maybe a situation comedy being broadcast real plainly out there. But you know, we have sent messages out into space trying to contact them. And we figure, well, maybe they're doing the same thing.
And so they're sending out messages, and so we're looking for noises that indicate intelligent life. And out of all that noise, what they do is they feed from these radio telescopes. They feed all of this through banks of computers. And these computers crunch all the numbers, all of the data. And what the computers are doing, they're looking for an intelligent sequence. Something that tells them that an intelligence actually created this noise. Now stay with me. You have a scientist here that's looking for intelligence out in space, and they're going to find it. When will they know that they found it? When they find something that has intelligent design. Well, now that's interesting, because they distinguish the noise from communication, because the communication is intelligent design. So they're looking for patterns, they're looking for a design. And what that says is they know that design demands a designer, and here they have the ultimate communication from space. The ultimate communication, the stars, the sun, the moon, the planets of our solar system, everything in a beautiful, as I mentioned a moment ago, ballet, a harmonic ballet, like a clock. And they ignore that design. And you talk about hypocrisy. They ignore that design. And I wonder if one day a computer goes, wake up, we just found something. And they find a series here in the noise that it looks like design. I wonder which scientist is going to say, no, we can't accept that. Because you see, that came from space, and any design that comes from the order of space, it must be a chance. No, that's that little coincidence that they find is going to be a gold mine for them. The particular branch, university, whatever area that finds that, that's going to be a gold mine for them, because federal funding, boom, right there. They're a bunch of hypocrites. That's the truth of that. They're a bunch of hypocrites. Paul pointed out the fact that we can see God in His creation. In Romans chapter 1, verses 20 and 21, just before this in verse 19, Paul writes, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. How? How is God shown? For since the creation of His world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. Intelligent design and creation. Even His eternal power and Godhead. You can't see the eternal power and Godhead of God, but you can see what it has done. If you can see what it has done, then it must exist. Just like if you have a car, then you have to have an auto manufacturer. If you have a watch, what is that? That's an Armatron. If you have an Armatron watch, you know, there's a company that made that, and it has a name, Armatron. That's what we have right here. We have the eternal power of Godhead. They are without excuse in denying God, because although they knew God, they did not glorify Him as God. Design is one of the best arguments that you can use in talking to people about God, about the existence of God. And, of course, Paley's watch, a man named Paley, he wasn't the first one to use this argument, because it was already in the Bible when he came along. But a man named Paley, he modernized it by using a watch. And he pointed out the fact that when you have a watch, this was pre-computers, because he probably would have used a computer if he had one. When you have a watch, you have something that no one can deny. Someone had to design it. I mean, you can't just stick a bunch of parts together, can you? This thing has to keep time, has to keep it accurately. It obviously indicates intelligent design. I like to illustrate it like this. Let's say that you're walking along the beach, and I know you're a little ways from the beach. But you take a vacation, you go to the beach, And let's say that, Nancy's walking along the beach there barefooted, and she hits something with her foot there. And she digs down in the sand and she pulls it out. That looks like a watch. She cleans it off, and sure enough, Timex. And so she's looking at it and she's wondering, you know, who might have lost it in the sand. And George comes over and he looks over her shoulder. And George says, "Oh, look, honey, you found one of those watches that evolved out in the ocean." "Yeah, you know, over hundreds of years now, all these shipwrecks out there in the ocean, you know, those parts have just been kind of churning around in the hurricanes and the tropical storms, and things have been combining together out there. And they end up getting fused together. And you know, the sand on the bottom, it just kind of etches away at it, and the salt in the water kind of eats away at it. And over time, you get enough time and you get enough chance there, all those parts just happen to come right together in just the right way. And there must have been a hurricane, because as you can see, the second hand's still running there. Must have been a hurricane that wound the spring before it went in there, you see. And then it set the time, and it's right. And look, the date's right, too. Wow, that's a great find, honey. Now, who believes that? Oh, looky there. It etched the name in the back right there. Must have been a little bit of natural sand blasting out there in the ocean. That's crazy. And yet, scientists want us to believe that the original watch, the universe, the solar system that keeps the perfect time. You know, the solar system is what your watch is based on. It's what keeps the time. How do they determine 24-hour days? How do they determine the way that works? You think maybe it has something to do with the rotation of the earth and the rising and setting of the sun and getting one day to the next day? And of course, it was said in the beginning in Genesis chapter 1, the evening and the morning was the next day. And the evening and the morning was the next day. And the evening and the morning, the sun does that. The sun tells you. I'm going to tell you right now, our solar system is the original watch. And anybody who can say that a watch that they put on their wrist was designed intelligently and sold, and then can deny that the original, the solar system, which the timing on this is based on, that was all a chance, they're hypocrites. And there's a reason why they want to deny that. It's not because the facts show that there is no God. That's not it. They have other reasons. Some of the times it's funding, as we spoke of earlier, and many times it's because they don't want to acknowledge that there's someone bigger than them that they have to answer to. That's a lot of it. That's a lot of it. Now, when we look at the world around us, there are components that make it what it is. And I know you recognize this. I want to point these out very quickly. How much time do I have? Well, when...
10:30.
About 10:30? That's the second bell?
That's the first bell. But go, you can go.
10:35, okay. Well, I don't want to go over. I can fit it in. I just have to be watching. The Earth's orbital speed, the speed at which we are actually moving around the sun. You recognize we're going around the sun, and we have a tilt that our axis is at, 23 degrees. And as we go around the sun, the seasons are created. But we're going around the sun. We're at 1,080 miles per minute, basically. 64,800 miles per hour. You know, an hour from now, you will be roughly 64,800 miles from where you were right now. That's hard for us to imagine. Moving through space, we don't even notice it. If we were going slower, you see, we're going that speed, and it holds our mass at a distance from the sun that is perfect for us. If we were going slower, orbit begins to decay, and we begin to work our way into the sun. And if we've been going around the sun for as long as the scientists say, and we had been going slower, we would have already been in the sun. Now, I don't have to tell you that you and I would not be here having this conversation if that were the case. If we were moving faster. If we're moving faster, we begin to move away from the sun. And so the speed at which we are moving, along with our mass and our distance from the sun, all have to work together perfectly. Those are components that make things work so that we can live here. What are the odds that those three components would actually be there? The speed, the mass of the earth, and the distance from the sun. Those three components have to be right for an orbit to work right. What are the odds? We're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. The rotation of the earth. It's hard to imagine that you are, right at this moment, moving at 1,000 miles per hour just in the rotational velocity of the earth. But that's how fast the earth is spinning, roughly. What if the earth was spinning slower? If the earth were spinning slower, you would certainly be sorry in Austin, Texas. It might not bother us quite as badly as quickly in Beckley, West Virginia. But down here in Texas, you know how hot the summers get. And your day gets longer. You think the days are long now in summer? Let the earth spin a little bit slower. See how hot you get. You see, the speed of the earth is just right to keep it cooling. It's kind of like a rotisserie. What we are, really. It's a rotisserie. And we're only facing the sun a part of the time as we go around it. And what if you move the rotisserie slower? Then every part of the surface gets hotter, right? And if you spin it faster, then things begin to cool off. I don't know, maybe the Weather Channel ought to invest in jet engines to make the earth move faster to fix this global warming. You know, they're trying everything else. You just go through it. When we look at the tilt in relation to the sun, I mentioned a moment ago, you have the sun and the earth is tilted to it. We have this tilt and it creates our seasons. As we go around the sun, we find that the North Pole is closer to the sun in that tilt. And as we go around, the seasons change and then the South Pole. That's why when it is winter here, it's summer down in Australia. And when it's winter in Australia, it's summer here. It's because with that tilt, the northern hemisphere, southern, that all changes. And we need that. We have to have that. What are the odds that the earth had come out tilted? What if the earth had been lined up perpendicular with its orbit around the sun? What would happen? The two poles would be in twilight continually, all the time. And the oceans around the middle would begin to vaporize. That vapor would begin to migrate north and south and would freeze at the poles. It wouldn't be long before life would be impossible on the earth. Not only is it great for the seasons of the year, and I know you don't have the changing of the leaves like we do, but we would sure miss that up there in West Virginia. When we look at it, then, we need that tilt of the earth. That's just another component. The earth's atmosphere. The earth's atmosphere actually does many things for us. Not only does it provide the impetus for the storms that water the land, but we find that it has a density. It keeps the meteors. It allows the really dangerous ones most of the time to burn up in the atmosphere so they don't strike the land. You know, these meteors, they're coming in anywhere from 6 to 40 miles per second. You don't dodge them. If one of them's going to get you, it's going to get you. You know, you see movies where it shows a meteor coming in. It's not really very realistic. You get a nice big meteor coming in at, let's say, 30 miles a second. You know, you don't get a good camera shot of it there and just watch it come in for dramatic effect. It's got you. Our atmosphere takes care of that for us. What are the odds that our atmosphere would have the density, have the kind of layers that it needs to have, and of course the magnetic field around it? Everything would be just right for what we have around our earth in order to take care of us. We are in a kind of a cocoon, and it's a designed cocoon to take care of us as we travel through space. If the oceans had been just a few feet thicker, you don't realize it, but the oxygen would have been absorbed. And we find that the carbon dioxide as well, life would have become impossible on the face of the earth. The depth of the ocean was important. And God set things just the way it needed to be set. The atmosphere was thinner, those meteors would be burning up, and of course then there's the recipe. The recipe for the atmosphere. We usually think of, well, we're breathing oxygen. Yes, you're breathing oxygen, but it's not pure oxygen. You're breathing air. We find that nitrogen is the chief ingredient in our atmosphere. 21% is all you have of oxygen. And then you have other elements in the last 1% of the atmosphere, argon, xenon, the CO2, so on and so forth. All of these ingredients, but they're the recipe that's right for you and me to take in a lungful and keep living. What are the odds that that would be right? Wouldn't it be nice if the oxygen mixture was higher? Yeah, it'd be real nice until the first time the meteor came in and hit the woods. And you know what oxygen does to things that burn. Yes, people think that oxygen is explosive. Oxygen is not explosive. Oxygen makes things explosive. If it will burn, put it in an oxygen atmosphere, and it becomes explosive. And that's what our world would become if the recipe wasn't right. What are the odds that the recipe would be right? And then there's your human body. All the way from molecule up to entire system and everything in between, there are billions of components. Everything in your body needs to be just right. And you and I know what happens when we don't have things just right. What keeps your saliva glands that produce saliva, what keeps them from producing stomach acid? You thought about that? You know, you have various glands in your body. And various bodily organs are producing fluids. What if your tear glands produce stomach acid? You know, when you were conceived, there were only two cells that came together to do that. And out of that, from that to the blastocyst all the way up to the fetus, there had to be a determination that the tear glands were going to make tears, the saliva glands would make saliva, and the stomach would create stomach acid. What keeps it doing it just right? There's intelligent design there. Something, and science still doesn't understand how you get from two cells and how in the stem cell process you actually get down to all of these various systems. What are the odds that they would come together the way they do? What are the odds? Well, let's talk about that for just a moment. And I want to do so under the heading of Psalm 14 and verse 1. The fool that said in his heart, there is no God. You are about to see why the person who says there is no God is a fool. Is a fool. Some people don't like that word. David said it, and I'll use it. You say there is no God, you are a fool. Now, we have trouble with odds. You know, it's kind of, I kind of hate to tell an angry joke. Well, maybe I won't do it. I'll tell it to you afterward if you want to hear it. But what are odds? When we look at odds, that simple odds are easily figured. Two components, for example. If you have two possibilities, for example, you have something that's red and something that's blue. You put them in a hat. What are the odds that you will pull out one particular one when you reach in and pull out? One and two. And you figure that by one times two. If there are three components, let's say you have a three blue beads, cyan, aqua, and navy blue beads in there, and you go to pull one out, what are the odds that you will pull them out in just the order that you want them? Put them down, put them in order, what are the odds that they come out in the right order? One times two times three. That is illustrated by this particular graphic here. A, B, C, just call it aqua, blue, and cyan. Three shades of blue. There are six possible combinations. So to get those, you have those combinations. And he said, Bob, this isn't a math class. No, it's not, but please bear with me. Think about this for a moment. Notice that when you get down to five combinations, you are already down to 1 and 120 for your odds. And this is only simple odds. We're not sticking the stuff back in the hat to pull it out. All we're doing is dumping it out and putting it in order and figuring the odds that it's going to come out that way. We're not talking about repeats or anything like that. So this is simple odds. When we get to 100 components, let's say you put 100 colors in a hat. What are the odds that you could dump it out and that they would come out in any one given particular order? It yields the astounding result that just 100 colors, 100 possibilities, it yields the astounding result of 10 to the 158th power. That is a 1 with 158 zeros behind it. Go home and pull out your computer and figure out how many pages that fills up. Just start pasting zeros and count them out. 1 with 158 zeros behind it. And come back this afternoon and tell me how many pages that fills up. 10 to the 158th power. That's just 100 possibilities. Now, I want you to think about this in terms of the various things we've talked about. For example, our Earth and its relation to the sun, there are three factors right there. Distance, mass, and speed. They all needed to be just right. We have the recipe for the atmosphere. You can imagine that when you get right down to it, it would be very easy to come up with just 100 parts of our solar system and our planet that would need to be just right. If you want to, just look at your body. As we mentioned, there are billions of components involved. Okay, now think about this for just a moment. Science has, in its infinite capabilities, calculated that the number of electrons in the entire universe is 10 to the 80th power. That's a 1 with 80 zeros after it. That's how many electrons are in the entire universe. That gives you an idea of how big that number is, 10 to the 158th power. That gives you an idea of how big it is. Now, I want you to think for a moment about 30 billion years. That's how old many scientists would tell us that all of this is. 30 billion years ago, there was this big bang, and everything started. Okay? In 30 billion years, there are only 10 to the 18th power seconds. That's a 1 with 18 zeros behind it. That's how many seconds there are in 30 billion years. Now think about this for just a moment. They always talk about, given enough time, chance can produce it. Now I want you to think about this. That means that in 30 billion years, if the demon of chance were to take a shot at making everything that we have the way it is right now, if every second they took one shot at trying to get it right, the demon of chance still would not have produced enough results in order to cover just 100 components. In fact, if I remember correctly, there are about 261 billion years left for you to go through all of the possibilities, one per second, to get all the possibilities, and that's just for 100 components. Just 100. Now let me put this in perspective for you. NASA, as it began to explore space, it set one of its departments on a project to determine the simplest life form. What would be involved in finding the simplest life form out in space? What they discovered was they would have to find that the simplest life form that they knew was a protein that they were willing to call life. You and I wouldn't call it life, but they would call it life. It was a protein that had 400 components involved in it. 400. That's the simplest protein. That's the simplest life that they could come up with. 400. There, we're just talking about 100. A protein, a complex protein, it's 400. Now, if a protein is 400, what do you think you are? How much greater do you think you rate than a protein? I'm going to tell you right now, there is absolutely, positively, not one shred of possibility that this solar system or this universe, any of the life upon this earth, or you or me, came about by chance. It is absolutely, positively impossible. It cannot be. It is the impossible dream of a fool. And that's what our psalmist is saying. The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. And so, the heavens declare the glory of God, as we noted at the beginning in Psalm 19 and verse 1. And it's going to be the fool who denies that glory that is declared within those. And so for our young people, I would bid you to consider the fact that when you look at all of the evidence that they try to provide for life coming about by chance and evolution taking, we're talking about the general theory of evolution, by the way, and all of these things came about by chance, it's impossible. It is absolutely impossible. There is not a computer or a series of computers on the face of this earth that can even begin to calculate the odds that this thing took place by chance. And what science tells us, they have a certain number. I can't remember how many zeros they put out there, but it's less than 158. And if they come up with those odds, science says it's impossible. That tells me it's impossible that chance did this. This is the compelling evidence for the existence of God. Well, it's a little bit tedious when you crunch through numbers and you talk about things that are scientific. But I think these are things that are especially important for our young people to have as they go out into the world. And of course, it's important for us as older ones that as we talk to others, we have a conviction in the voice that we utter in saying, there is a God. I thank you for your attention.
Before we dismiss, I want to make one announcement.